Good morning, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Thank you very much for being here. Today we will be taking public testimony on House Bill 4145A. First of all, I'd like to go through a couple of, I'm going to call them ground rules for today. First of all, I hope that everyone that's here today to give testimony will respect each other as testimony is given, even though you may disagree with a perspective that one individual may have who's testifying. They have the right, just like you have the right, to come up and give us your testimony without interference. It looks like we're not going to need to have access to an overflow room, but if we do, we'll go over that as we get there. What we're going to do at this point, because there has been a lot of desire to have testimony, the notice did, in fact, go out to limit the amount of testimony time that people will have to give public testimony. We will have two or three panels that we have that are invited individuals to give testimony, including some representatives. I believe the governor will make her way to the hearing after she takes care of another obligation that she has. Also I want to make certain for those who are giving testimony, if you don't have enough time to say everything you want to, realize that if you have not already posted it with the committee, you can do so up until 5 p.m. today. So feel free to add to your testimony. If you have in fact posted your testimony, what we request that you do is not read your testimony into the record, because it's already part of the record. So speak from the heart as to what you want us to have, summarize that testimony that you've already presented, and that way we'll make certain that you get your comments in, and we hopefully will be able to get everyone else who's signed up to testify. The other, ground rule I'm gonna ask is if you have one of these little things called a cell phone, if you could put it on mute, because the last thing I think you would want is to have your testimony all of a sudden being interfered by someone's phone going off. So if you do that, that would be very nice. And I think that's gonna take care of what we're gonna do. So what we'll do is we'll go ahead and open up the public hearing on House Bill 4145A. And I'm going to ask Chana, our judicial assistant, to give us an overview before we start taking the first panel testimony.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, thank you very much. House Bill 4145 comes to you from the governor. It expands the existing prohibition on possession of firearms to include those who are under a court order or who have a qualifying conviction related to a family or household members, which includes persons who have been involved in a sexually intimate relationship but who may not be residing together. It also includes those who have been convicted of stalking in the prohibition on possession of firearm or ammunition. Additionally, the second part of the measure requires the Oregon State Police to enter qualifying convictions and terms of the judgment in the appropriate state and national databases and to send reports of attempted purchases by prohibited individuals to the appropriate law enforcement entities, and then to submit a report every year on those attempted purchases and the outcomes, including any charges or resolutions to charges that may follow.
One other thing I wanted to let everyone know, we have a couple of members who are not at the dais yet. They have other obligations in the building. They will be joining us, and I assume that some of my other colleagues here may have to step out possibly for testimony, and if they do, please excuse them, but we all have multiple different assignments that we need to be taking care of. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and start the first panel, and that would be call up Representative Peluso, Senator Manning, and Sheriff Reese. Good morning to all who would ever like to be the first.
I'll start it off, sir. Good morning, Chair Przanski and members of the Senate Committee on I should know this word, shouldn't I? Judiciary. For the record, my name is Carla Peluso. I proudly represent House District 50, the city of Gresham, and a small parcel of Southeast Portland. I am honored to speak on behalf of House Bill 4145, which improves law enforcement's ability to protect women, children who are or most likely will experience violence in their lifetime. Many of you have heard me speak a great deal about my law enforcement experience, and you know well that supporting survivors of domestic violence is an area I am passionate about. In my 30 years of law enforcement, including 6 years as a police chief, I became way familiar with the patterns of household abuse and violence. I worked on cases that involved rape, homicides, child abuse, and domestic violence. I responded to to far too many domestic violence calls, each one had a profound impact on me. Many of the cases I worked on were horrific and could have ended very differently if there had been more proactive protections reducing access to firearms. If a weapon is within reach of an abuser, the risk of homicidal violence is extreme. Family definitions have changed within our community since I began my career. It is important that the definition in Oregon law that protects family members from abuse in the home are updated to protect today's families. Additionally, if a person with a domestic violence conviction seeks to possess a firearm and submits the required background checks to do so, it is important that law enforcement be made aware of that attempt so that all the proper safety measures can be taken to protect the family. When a gun finds its way into a family plagued by violence, all too often lives are lost. Oregon House Bill 4145 will keep guns out of the hands of dangerous abusers and others with violent and dangerous histories. Most important, House Bill 4145 will save lives. Thank you, Chair Przanski, and members of the committee for your attention to House Bill 4145, often referred to as the boyfriend loophole. I urge your support.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff. Good morning, Chair Przanski, Vice Chair Thatcher, members of Judiciary. I am here in support of House Bill 4145, and here is why. This bill is
Senator,
so...
Senator, if you'll give us your full name for the record.
Oh, I did skip that, didn't I? My name is James Ivory Manning, Jr. I'm a senator from Senate District 7, which is Northwest Eugene, Junction City, and all of the beautiful agricultural land in between. Thank you so much. I apologize. So now, back to the bill. 4145... my job as a former police officer, I have also investigated a lot of domestic disturbance. One case that I cited earlier where it was a husband and wife that were actually living apart, but they would come in contact with each other. One time, the husband attempted to burn a house down with all of the family members on the inside unsuccessfully. I received numerous calls on patrol to go to both of the residents because for some reason, they were kind of getting together. I don't understand it. I tried to get her, the wife, to file charges against her husband, but she refused. Months later, he shot her 9 times, killing her. So I look at some of the other cases that I dealt with domestic abuse as a topic or the engine for taking the life of some others. And it happened time and time again. This bill is not about the Second Amendment rights. This bill is about people's right to life. When we start looking at the casualties and the body counts that are insurmountable when it comes to domestic violence, and that's even on law enforcement side. Recently, law enforcement was called to the scene of a domestic violence. 2 officers were shot and killed. So this is a much bigger thing when you have convicted people of domestic violence and other crimes, and they're still able to obtain a firearm legally, then we have a broken system. Oregon has been leading the way in so many cases as far as how we're dealing with making sure that we live safe. This is not about any violating or taking anybody's weapons. This is about all these people that's trying to live their lives and have a chance. We have an obligation to make sure that they can live their lives. And those that choose to go out, beat up family members, assault women, for whatever reason, they shouldn't be allowed to have a gun because I've seen it too many times turn over to the point where they are the murderer shooting a woman 9 times. That's ridiculous. That's hard. It broke my heart. I still get those images in my head. So I am, this panel, I am asking you to please support this bill. This bill is very critical. I think the bill should have been stronger, and I will push to make this bill stronger. But at this time right now, I think that we need to get this bill off the floor and empower law enforcement to enforce this bad behavior that we're allowing to go on for so long. So thank you so much for your time. Sheriff.
Chair Prozanski, members of the committee, my name is Mike Reese. As Multnomah County Sheriff, I am here in support of House Bill 4145 because I see the work my team does every day to protect victims of domestic violence. And frankly, their jobs would be safer if this bill were passed into law. Domestic violence situations are inherently volatile and life-threatening. Domestic abusers are dangerous individuals who assert their power and control through force, intimidation, and violence. These individuals exploit current loopholes in our law. In Oregon gun law, we can sometimes allow individuals to possess a firearm if they are not married to their victim, even if a restraining order is filed against them. There's no question that a gun multiplies an abuser's ability to harm or kill their victim or anyone else at the scene, including police officers. My team responded 21 times to domestic assaults involving a firearm last year alone. In one recent incident, two MCSO deputies responding to a 911 call arrived at the scene to find a man with one hand over a panicked woman's mouth and a gun to her head. Fortunately, our deputy sheriffs were able to de-escalate that situation and take the abuser into custody. Law enforcement sees firsthand how a gun makes dangerous situations even worse. And this loophole in Oregon law is a threat to our communities and the police officers who have been sworn to protect and serve them. I want to say thank you to the lawmakers who are courageously fighting for common sense gun laws in Oregon, including Governor Kate Brown, Senator Jenny Burdick, Senator Floyd Prozanski, and all of the House lawmakers who voted yes on this bill last week. As public servants, we share a responsibility to keep our communities safe and look past our differences to serve all Oregonians. I urge you to pass House Bill 4145 so we can better protect victims of domestic violence and the brave men and women who respond to their calls for help. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any questions for anyone on the panel? Senator Thatcher.
Sheriff Reese, thank you. I was hoping law enforcement might be here because I, as I'm reading the bill, I had a question as to how you would interpret this. In Section 9, it just says this act applies to possessions of firearms or ammunition. Would background checks be required for ammunition, or how would you enforce that? How would that play out,
this
I guess?
Time, but if you, if there's a restraining order and it prohibits someone from possessing firearms or ammunition, and we find at the scene of a situation like a domestic violence situation that the person is in possession of ammunition, then we would hold them in violation of that order.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator, you made reference to Section 9. I'm wondering if you can maybe clarify, because Section 9 for here looks like it's the
Did
emergency.
Did I look the wrong one?
Okay. I got it.
Engrossed,
just on the
right.
You're just looking at the effective date as to when they would start.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, down at the bottom, and it just points out, and there might be in other parts, but okay. I just wanted to.
Great. All right, thank you. Any other questions for this panel? Thank you all very much for coming forward. Our second panel is going to be Kevin Sterick, Roger Byers, and Phil Watson.
For the record, my name is Kevin Sterrett with the Oregon Firearms Federation. You know, we talked a lot about closing the boyfriend loophole. In the House, we expressed some concerns that these kind of orders are frequently misused. And we're, of course, assured by Jennifer Williamson that there's a process for dealing with people who lie in these allegations. I'm going to show you one of the boyfriends we're talking about here. You may have heard about this guy accused of forcing his girlfriend into sex work. Same guy from Bend. Terrible, terrible stuff. Of course, he was arrested. Every single word was a lie. It was a complete fabrication. Furthermore, the woman who made these fabrications had done it before. This wasn't her first rodeo. 2 weeks before she accused him, she accused someone else of rape, and it was all false. Why does this matter? Because she was never prosecuted, because the DA said he didn't want to discourage people from coming forward with these kinds of allegations. This is like saying, We're not going to prosecute bank robbers because it might discourage someone from making a withdrawal. The fact is that these kind of orders are frequently abused. This young man lost his job, his home, his reputation, and nothing was done to his accuser. These are the kind of people you'll be protecting with this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Roger Beyer. I'm here representing the National Rifle Association. On behalf of the NRA, I strongly encourage you to oppose House Bill 4145. This bill would expand the class of persons in Oregon that could be prohibited from possessing firearms. This legislation would add stalking to the list of offenses that would result in the removal of Second Amendment rights and would change existing laws so that a broader definition of family members, family and household members, would be applied to firearm prohibitions for certain misdemeanor offenses and protective orders. In doing so, this expansion would go well beyond existing state and federal law and strip individuals of their constitutional rights. Federal law limits the firearm prohibitions to convictions for misdemeanor crimes of domestic violence that have as an element the use or attempted use of force or the threatened use of a deadly weapon. This bill would strip an individual's constitutional right for the misdemeanor offense of stalking, which is defined under ORS 163-732, to include alarming another individual through unwanted contact. Oregon's stalking misdemeanor offense does not require the use of force or even attempted use of force. Furthermore, it doesn't even require a finding that the individual is a credible threat. The legislation would also amend the definition of those prohibited from firearm possessions as applied to certain misdemeanors and protective orders. Federal law limits application of firearm prohibitions to protective orders and misdemeanor crimes of domestic violence when committed by a current or former spouse of the person, an individual who is a parent of the child of the person, and an individual who cohabitates or has cohabitated with the person. This bill would expand that definition that is contained in ORS 166-255 to include the expanded definition in ORS 135-230. The new definition would include adult persons related by blood or marriage, as well as those who have been involved in a sexually intimate relationship. Domestic violence is a serious issue, and those convicted of violent crimes should be addressed accordingly. House Bill 4145, however, removes a constitutional right for a misdemeanor offense that requires no finding of a credible threat, and we oppose that. Thank you for your attention. Happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. Phil?
For the record, my name is Phil Watson, here with the Firearms Policy Coalition, opposing this bill, and I really want to leave you with two additional main bullet points other than what the two gentlemen already laid out for you. Number one, you can already get a protective order in Oregon as of last year for a conviction with stalking because you all passed SB 719, as you already know. So the second bullet point I wanted to stress, as Roger with NRA just pointed out, ORS 135-230 is unlike not only the national law, but the law in any other state. I've double-checked this with the NCSL, and I can send you all of the links if you would like. Oregon law in 135-230 literally says anybody that you may have had a sexual encounter with at any point in time, ever. You may not have dated this person. This could have been 20 years ago, and this person can, for whatever reason, reach out and touch you with one of these protective orders. Other states have four things that protect this from happening. They have some sort of time limit in which you have to, with your last interactions. So if I met you in a bar a year ago, and whether or not we had sex is also debatable, but if I met you in a bar a year ago, and that was the last contact you had with me, if it was there a time limitation on it, you couldn't do that to me. There's also length of time and frequency with other states. What that means is I would have had to have been dating you for a certain amount of time. If we went out on one date a year ago, for example, then that would not qualify as a dating relationship, quote unquote, which is what most states have. So, and also the last requirement is usually number four, a nature of the relationship. So if we texted back and forth a couple of times, that's not necessarily a dating relationship. And if we texted back and forth a couple of times a year ago, then that wouldn't really meet most frequency requirements in other states. So Oregon law is very ripe for abuse if this bill passes. So I would recommend definitely, whether or not you want to vote on this bill today or not, I would first debate before you even pass it or not pass it, first amending Oregon 135230. Thanks, and if you have any questions.
All right, thank you. Any questions from the panel? Senator Wagner.
Maybe respectful of time, but Mr. Beyer, do you and the NRA support the statute as it's currently constructed without this bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Wagner, the statute we currently have, 166-255, was passed in its current form in 2015. At that time, NRA was neutral on the bill that brought this into statute.
Any other questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming forward with your testimony. We're now going to take testimony from Governor Brown, as well as I'm calling up for the Department of Justice, Aaron Greenwald. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair Brzezinski, members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. For the record, I'm Governor Kate Brown. I'm here today to discuss the importance of moving forward on House Bill 4145. This common sense, life-saving legislation will help protect Oregonians by closing the intimate partner loophole. It will prevent convicted stalkers and domestic violence offenders from buying guns, and it makes our communities safer by keeping guns out of the wrong hands. Less than 2 weeks ago, I testified before the House Judiciary Committee on this same bill. I told the story of 24-year-old Washington County mother, Kate Armand, who was shot and killed by her estranged husband on a Christmas night in 2016. In the pursuit that followed, I told the House Committee about the Oregon State Police trooper who responded to the scene and was first to counter the suspect, Trooper Nick Cederberg. Cederberg was himself shot 12 times by the perpetrator. He valiantly fought his injuries, and fortunately, he has survived. But the story demonstrates just how dangerous and deadly instances of domestic violence can be when a firearm is present. It's not only true for those directly involved, but for law enforcement as well. In just the two-week span since I shared this story with the House Judiciary Committee, a young man with a history of violence, including alleged abuse of his girlfriend, walked into a Florida high school with an AR-15 and killed 17 people. And so it has begun, again and again, the all-too-familiar debate: who's to blame, what went wrong, what can be done. Families grieve and communities seek answers while pundits and politicians point fingers. But this time is different. This time we say no more. This must stop. Gun violence must end. We hear the anguished voices of families fresh from grief from this latest school shooting, joining with families from across the nation and here in Oregon who've lost loved ones from gun violence. They call on us to take action. And this time, we are hearing a call for action from the very high school students who ran for their lives a week ago. They are demanding that we take action. These students are calling on us as legislators and elected leaders to do all we can to keep our communities safer from senseless gun violence. Parents are writing my office wanting to know what's being done to keep their children safe and to keep guns out of the wrong hands. Oregonians need to know. We will not stop fighting to protect all of our families. As news headlines and the national dialogue focuses on this latest mass shooting, it is important to remember that most deaths caused by a gun go underreported, and all too often within the context of domestic violence. In the past 2 years alone, Oregon has experienced 66 fatalities due to domestic violence. Over half of these victims died from gunshots. We know that the presence of a gun in a domestic violence situation makes it 5 times more likely that a woman will be killed. Yet, even if the trigger is never pulled, abusers use guns to threaten and control their victims. In all, about 4.5 million women in the United States have been threatened with a gun by an intimate partner. This must stop. This time we say no more. We have a chance to take action to save lives. So today I urge you to pass House Bill 4145. I cannot sit here today and tell you that this bill would have prevented Florida's tragedy, nor can I predict how many lives we will save. But I can say that even if we only save one Oregonian, it will have been worth it. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Governor. I understand your schedule has you needing to leave, so let me just ask real quickly, is there any questions for the governor? Thank you very much for coming forward today. Erin.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Brzozinski, members of the committee. My name is Erin Greenewald. I'm here on behalf of Attorney General Rosenblum to testify in support of House Bill 4145. I work in the Criminal Justice Division of the Department of Justice as a domestic violence resource prosecutor. I've prosecuted domestic violence and sexual assault crimes for over 20 years. I'm also here in my capacity as the chair of the Domestic Violence Fatality Review Team. In addition to my written testimony, I've also submitted to you the team's recent letter report on our work. I hope you and your staff and others I know who are watching and listening will take some time to review that important letter report, as I believe it's relevant to today's topic, which is the dangerous intersection of firearms, domestic violence, and stalking. When discussing domestic violence, we often talk about statistics, and I will give some of those to you today because they're important for us to remember. But right now, I'd like to start by reading you 8 names. Troy Kimball, Judith Rose, Tyler Belays, Brenda Flews, Aaron Croker, Anita Harmon, Joshua Turnage, and, as Governor Brown mentioned, Kate Armand. These 8 people are among 16 that were killed in domestic violence-related incidents between December 25th of 2016 and January 16th of 2017. In that 3-week span, 16 people, including Aaron Croker's 3 children, died, or rather were killed, in 9 separate domestic violence-related incidents in 6 different Oregon counties, some of which you represent. In total, 32 people died in domestic violence-related incidents in 2017, and 60% of them died from firearms. Domestic violence is personal. It's not about just statistics. It happens to real people, and the impact upon those people, their loved ones, their communities, as you well know, is profound. And when guns are introduced into a domestic violence situation or relationship, the consequences can be, as they were for those that I just named, tragically fatal. I'd like to talk to you about just a couple of ways that HB 4145 proposes to amend existing 166255, as well as Section 3 of the bill, which proposes to clarify and improve entry of criminal judgment information. I'll begin with Section 3. Currently, we ask prosecutors to fill out and courts to sign what is colloquially known as a firearm findings document. In cases where defendants have been convicted of a quote-unquote qualifying misdemeanor crime of domestic violence, We do this because pursuant to federal law and now 166255, persons convicted of qualifying misdemeanor crimes of domestic violence can't possess firearms. We need these findings entered into the law enforcement data system, or LEDS, so that officers who later contact these individuals will be able to receive notification about that prohibition. It's an officer safety issue, a public and victim safety issue, and an enforcement of existing laws issue. Entry of these findings is what stops a firearm sale when a background check is done as well. Currently, there is no statute which mandates entry of this information, and it presents a huge gap in our law and in our ability to keep people safe. In terms of Section 1 proposals, currently domestic violence perpetrators who are convicted of qualifying misdemeanor crimes of domestic violence, and those typically in Oregon are considered to be assault and strangulation and attempts thereof, against intimate partners are prohibited from owning or possessing firearms or ammunition. The phrase intimate partners, and you've heard about this in the last panel, is taken from the federal statute, which our statute, 166255, is written. However, intimate partner is narrower than the phrase and definition family and household members that we use and have used for a very long time in the criminal justice system. For example, intimate partner leaves out relationships between adult persons related by blood and marriage, as well as those involved in a sexually intimate relationship who do not live together or who are not married. This amendment in House Bill 4145 would improve safety and protection to additional victims, but it would also, and this is not unimportant, undo some of the inconsistency in our statutory definitions. That is an important improvement. There is one thing I'd like to flag here. The change to family and household member is a critical one, but it's not enough in my opinion. The definition of family and household members leaves out an important segment of victims that need protection, and that is that people who are in dating relationships, but who are not intimate partners. That is, those who are not involved in a sexually intimate relationship. The definitions of intimate partner or family and household member, do not provide protections to those victims who are not married, in a sexually intimate relationship, or cohabit with a perpetrator. It's a gap that needs closing. I hope we can address that in the near future. Finally, House Bill 4145 proposes to prohibit persons convicted of stalking from owning or possessing firearms. Stalking has long been recognized in Oregon as a serious offense. In fact, upon a second conviction, stalking is a felony charge in Oregon. And not only is it a felony charge, for those familiar with the crime seriousness grid, it is an 8 on the crime seriousness grid. Stalking is a red flag or marker when assessing for lethality in domestic violence cases. 75% of or more of women murdered by their significant others have been stalked by them previously. Allowing convicted stalkers to own or possess firearms increases exponentially the chance of injury or death to the victims themselves or the public at large. It is a reasonable, valuable, and needed addition to our laws. House Bill 4145 provides sensible amendments to existing statutes that will afford increased safety to domestic and stalking victims. I thank you and Governor Brown for your efforts on this important issue, and I'd like to say a thank you in advance to the victims and survivors, as well as family members who I know will be speaking here today as well. And I'm happy to answer any of your questions.
Senator, excuse me, Denbrough.
Thank you. Thank you, Aaron. Can you say something about how the program that we passed, the Extreme Risk Protective Order program, is being implemented? Is it working? What do we know about it so far?
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. I will say directly to your question, I don't know specifically. I actually did receive an email last Friday while I was in court in a different county on the coast from an officer who had a question about the implementation. So I know that they're being used. In terms of the efficacy with which they're being used, I could not speak to that. I'm happy to get some more information and report back to you, however.
That would be great. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Senator Thatcher.
Thank you. You mentioned, it just occurred to me while you were speaking, you said that a previous conviction of stalking as a marker for people involved with domestic violence situations. I'm just wondering if there is any data in Oregon on people who have perpetrated or have been convicted of domestic violence situations or perpetrating it, and also had that in their background. Misdemeanor.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Brzezinski, Vice Chair Thatcher, members of the committee. There is significant data nationally around stalking and domestic violence. In terms of data that is Oregon specific, there is a dearth of funding around our ability to do research into domestic violence. The last really comprehensive report that I know about was done in 2005 by the Oregon Health Authority. Anecdotally, I can tell you, based on my own prosecution of crimes and as the chair of the Domestic Violence Fatality Review Team, it is incredibly common in those cases that we review and that I prosecute that there is a stalking background in those who are convicted of other domestic violence crimes. As an asterisk, what I would say is our stalking statutes are really convoluted, and it makes it difficult to investigate and to therefore prosecute and convict stalkers.
Follow up on that. Since you said there's data nationally on the stalking issue, are you familiar with how our stalking laws, which I agree are convoluted, compare nationally? And do you think that those should be looked at?
Chair Brzezinski, Vice Chair Thatcher, I have looked at them in the past. I haven't looked at them recently, but like with
anecdotally,
I would say that they're more convoluted and complicated than those around the country. I can provide information to you if it would be helpful to you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, Senator Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony. Can you give us a sense of scale? How many folks fit within the statute that currently exists that have had this the limitations imposed by the statute imposed upon them? Can you give us an idea? For example, this statute already applies to those who have restraining orders issued against them. How big is this class? We know from the governor's testimony, and I think yours, that there were some 60 incidents, 30 of which involved guns. How many folks are going to be, in your opinion, limited should this bill pass, looking backwards at how well it's worked to this point?
Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee, I'm sorry if I'm not understanding your question correctly. You're asking me in terms of if House Bill 4145 were to pass and the definitions upon which the prohibitions would apply, how many more people would be prohibited from possessing firearms or...
Let me forgive my confusion in the question. How well is the statute working now? How many folks have had this restriction on their right to have a gun imposed upon them?
Thank you for the clarification. I appreciate that. Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee, I would say again, anecdotally, from my conversations and interactions with both law enforcement and prosecutors, those who are actually prosecuting these cases, the statute as it's written now is working well. However, what I also see, because part of my job is I provide technical assistance, consultation to prosecutors around the state when they have questions. And so what I've seen from prosecutors is that they have identified cases where the relationship of the people in the cases that they're receiving fall outside of the current definitions. And so they're not able to charge people with possessing firearms because they don't fall within the current definition of the intimate partners.
Follow-up question?
Yes.
So the answer, I'm not hearing the answer to my question. I understand what this bill is intended to do. What I'm asking you is how many folks currently have had this law used in a way that removes the guns or makes it, the bill as I read it doesn't really remove their guns, it simply makes it illegal for them to have guns.
Correct.
So how many folks have had this law imposed so that they aren't supposed to have guns? What I'm trying to get is a sense of scope, scale, numbers from you today, and if you don't have them, where do I get them?
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee. I don't have those numbers. There are 36 counties in Oregon. I can certainly try to work with the Oregon District Attorney's Associations and those DA's offices to try to assess how many folks have been prosecuted under the current statute.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Lithicum.
If I may follow up, thank you for your testimony. If I may follow up on the direction Senator Benz was going, can you describe in terms of numbers, using just round numbers 30 and 60 that we heard in the description from you and the Senator, how many of those individuals would now get classified as a family or household member? And would this law have protected those? The numbers are out there. Those crimes were committed. How many individuals would qualify under this out of those historical numbers? This is designed to prevent that from occurring.
Sure.
And so I'm just trying to focus in. This would stop 2. It would stop 20. It would stop how many?
Sure. Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, I understand that you're looking for numbers, and I can appreciate that. Part of the issue and problem that we've always had is the data, our ability to gather data in terms of being able to know how many domestic violence cases are investigated, how many cases are prosecuted. And that's because there's inconsistency in terms of how they're categorized within each law enforcement agency, and those law enforcement agencies then provide that information to the district attorneys, and then they categorize their cases differently. So it's hard to say what or how many domestic violence cases came out of each DA's office. What I can tell you is that the intimate partner definition that is currently being used in our current statute is much narrower. And what I know from talking to prosecutors and law enforcement is that our ability to get to folks who fall within the broader definition of family and household members, including those who are related, adult persons related by blood, or who are involved in a sexually intimate relationship, but who do not cohabit with one another and who are not married with one another, would exponentially enlarge that group. However, I don't have hard numbers to give you. I don't believe those numbers exist. We could potentially extrapolate if we're able to get numbers from DA's office, but I don't believe the numbers that you're looking for exist at this point.
A follow-up on that, exponentially enlarging the group. This is actually under the subject to a court order for stalking, right? There's the ABC, et cetera. So it really doesn't expand a whole lot, because there is just a small focus of if that individual is subject to a court order that, and there's an ABC clear qualification under that. Is that correct?
Yes, Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee. So there's two different ways. Somebody can be subject to a stalking protective order, and there is a very stringent standard by which somebody has to go through in order to get a stalking protective order issued against them. As I understand this bill, a stalking conviction would be added to the qualifying misdemeanor crimes of domestic violence. And so it's not just somebody under House Bill 4145 has a protective order, a stalking protective order against them, is that they have actually been convicted of stalking, which is, as you know, you have to, beyond a reasonable doubt, have been found that you committed the crime of stalking.
Okay, one last follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last follow-up, in the current statute, can you help cash out for us what the phrase, how in the court system a credible threat gets weighed and analyzed and judged by the court itself?
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, that's a very good question. And if you're talking about in terms of the stalking protective order, that's one of the issues that we have had in terms of how the Court of Appeals and Supreme Court have analyzed our lower court's assessment of whether somebody possesses or presents a credible threat to somebody. It's multivariate in terms of the actions or communications that the respondent takes against the protected party. There is no bright line test that the court uses.
All right. Any other questions, Senator Vance?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. And the key here is that we kind of have some understanding of how much good this law, if passed, would do. That's what we're all trying to get at. And the one of the measures, of course, of the alternatives available to us is the cost that would go along with this if passed. And I was just glancing through the bill and trying to figure out if there was any additional cost to law enforcement whatsoever as a result of this passing. I don't see it. It seems like it simply expands the scope modestly of that which already exists. Am I correct in my guess that this is not going to cost law enforcement anymore, but simply expands the scope of activity that would be subject to this law?
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, I'm not intimately familiar with the discussions around the costs associated, but from my experience in sort of assessing what would happen practically speaking if this were passed, it would be law enforcement prosecutors would be doing the same job that they're doing now in terms of the people who would come in front of them typically are being investigated for similar types of crimes or other crimes. This is just this would allow officers and allow prosecutors to get at the guns of people who shouldn't have had them in the first place, who they're already investigating. That is to say, I don't see where there would be increased costs associated with this.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
You said to get the guns. I don't quite understand that statement. The law appears to indicate they simply can't have them. Is there some method by which you're suggesting this law would allow them to go take their guns from them, or that they need to bring them to court with them, or turn them into the is that what you're saying?
No, sir. No, Chair Brzezinski, Senator Benz, no, of course not. What I'm saying is if law enforcement received a report that somebody who had been convicted of a qualifying crime of domestic violence misdemeanor or of a stalking, and they went to investigate it, and they found that that person, in fact, had a gun, that person wasn't supposed to have a gun, that they would be able to arrest that person. And like with any other crime where a person who has been convicted of some, for instance, a felony, they would be able to take that gun and potentially forfeit that gun.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other questions? All right, thank you very much, Aaron.
Thank you.
All right, that concludes the portion of our invited or elected representatives' testimony. We're now going to start in our public section of the testimony. But before I start, I have gone through the list to see how many people we have signed up. Is there anyone here in the room who did not sign up that wanted to sign up for giving testimony? All right, not seeing anyone. What we're going to do is, based on the time that we have, we had limited it to 2 minutes. We're now going to limit it to 2.5, so 2.5 minutes. So you will have, so we can maximize the time we're here and allow people to not have to be cut off. So with that, we're going to start with Rachel Pansek, Pastor Warren Light, and Ashley Panlup, I believe it is. Panlup. And just to make this happen, when we get up here, whoever's ready, I need your name and then your testimony, please. Go ahead.
Hello.
And I'm going to turn the mic towards you, so make sure you're on the record.
Hello, my name is Ashley Planalp, and I'm from Albany, Oregon. My career is in healthcare. Mass shootings are what get a lot of attention in the media. Like many people, I want to work to fix that problem, but I understand that gun violence does not just come in the form of mass shootings. Losing a loved one to gun violence does not hurt any more or less whether the person dies alongside others in a massacre or individually in a domestic dispute. I am concerned about preventing gun violence in all its forms, and so should a society that allows its citizens to purchase highly effective weaponry. One of the most basic mechanisms to prevent violent persons from obtaining firearms is our state's instant background check system. Background checks are overwhelmingly supported by Oregonians across the state. We know that there is a flaw in this system and that it needs to be fixed. Under current law, live-in domestic abusers, where a restraining order is in place, are prohibited from purchasing firearms. This law excludes dating partners and convicted stalkers. Victims of abuse, whether it is at the hands of non-live-in partners or convicted stalkers, are no less deserving of protection in our society. Passing House Bill 4145 closes this dangerous loophole in the system. Here is the reality. More than half of the women killed with guns in the U.S. are murdered by their partners. Every month, 50 women are shot and killed in the U.S. by a current or former boyfriend or spouse. I am thankful that my mother is not a part of this statistic. She was stalked by my father right after their divorce. And I'm convinced that the reason why she lived, or why she's still alive today, is because she left him. This is a very specific law that targets the most dangerous people in our society. I would like to leave the committee with this final thought. Researchers at Everytown for Gun Safety have examined mass shootings between January 2009 and December 2016 and found that 54% of mass shootings involved a partner or other close family member that was killed. This legislation, even though it is a small piece of the puzzle, it is a very important piece of the puzzle, and it is relevant to the national conversation about gun violence prevention and mass shootings. Please vote to pass House Bill 4145 and help Oregon combat this country's gun violence epidemic. Thank you.
Thank you. Who'd like to go next?
Chair Prozanski and members of the committee. My name is Rachel Prusak, and I'm a member of Oregon Nurses Association and a member of the Oregon chapter Moms Demand Action. As a nurse, I have cared for people in their most vulnerable conditions, and as a result, I've become an advocate in my community on healthcare issues. Today, I'm here as a survivor of an abusive dating partner. I escaped alive, and I'm here to give voice to those that need to escape and to prevent another woman from a traumatic, potentially deadly experience. I am here for the 1 in 3 American women who, research tells us, will be impacted by domestic violence, and those who are 5 times more likely to die because a gun is involved. When I was 16, a high school football player turned his attention to me. We began dating. Within a few months, the attention evolved into controlling behaviors laced with violent undertones. His temper grew short, violent threats peaked, and he became increasingly aggressive. Thankfully, my parents helped me secure a restraining order. One day, he came to my house, armed with a gun that he flashed at me, demanding that I walk with him so we could talk things out. He pointed the gun at my side as we walked. I was able to placate him, and he let me go. He was arrested for violating the restraining order on that occasion and several others. Soon after, I left my hometown for college and escaped. He continued to show up unannounced to the home of my parents, and the worry never left. To deal with the trauma, I turned to religion. I truly felt like my life was at constant risk. When I later learned that he had died, I experienced an indescribable relief knowing I'd be safe. HB 4145 closes a critical loophole in our current background check law. It will make sure that the law prohibits both abusive dating partners and abusive domestic partners who are under restraining orders from passing a background check. It is especially important since data shows that abusive dating partners kill women at the same rate as do abusive husbands. This law will also alert law enforcement that an abuser has tried to get a gun, providing law enforcement with the information and opportunities to investigate. Every day I realize how lucky I was to escape alive. Please vote yes on HB 4145 and help save the lives of more Oregon women and children. Thank you.
Pastor Light.
Thank you, Chair Prozanski and Vice Chair Thatcher and members of the committee for this opportunity. My name is Reverend Warren Light. I'm the pastor of Spirit of the Valley United Methodist Church in Halsey in rural Linn County. My parishioners almost all own firearms. My first gun was presented to me when I was 12 years old for a birthday present, and my dad taught me to be responsible with it. I'm here to say that my church members who were very active in supporting their constitutional right to vote and to be active in the community. They all support this bill. I also serve the Wesley Community Center at the University of Oregon in Lane County, where the bill is also fully supported. Having written over 150 abuse prevention policies for faith communities, served on the Domestic Violence Fatality Review Team, and co-chair currently in the Men's Engagement Committee on the Oregon Sexual Assault Task Force, I realize that this bill is maybe one of the most important things you'll do this year. To pass this bill is to act with compassion for all. Although gender does enter into this in a great way, this is a bill that protects people no matter what their gender. In the church, we work with both victims, survivors, and also with people who perpetrate. And we want everybody to go home safe. perpetrators end up shooting themselves a lot of the times, and those who don't perpetrate but consider it while they're sitting on a stash of weapons ruin their lives as well. At our country church, we have a yearly service remembering those who died in domestic violence incidents in Oregon. We name at least 30 names each year, usually more. These folks are our neighbors, and these are heartbreaking and preventable deaths. At the university, we support college students being stalked by intimate partners. When firearms are present in these situations at college, what happens is it becomes a nightmare. Many of the students have to leave school because these partners endanger them, their classmates, and the school itself. This bill affects not just one, but affects all. And you can create safety for survivors, for their children, and you can create a safe space even for those desperate and broken persons who might otherwise perpetrate lethal violence and ruin their own lives. So please close this loophole. And thank you for your consideration. Bless you in whatever tradition you're in. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming forward. Our next panel will be Manny Martinez. Manny?
Ms. Lohman?
Yes, sir.
You probably have a piece of this, my testimony.
Okay, we'll take it.
You can read it, or you kind of know you don't want to, but I'm here just as one specific reason. This is a Marxist law.
Yeah, Mr. Martinez, I need you to please put your name
Manuel
on the record.
Martinez, resided in Oregon, Kaiser. I denounce this bill because it's a Marxist law. It's Marxism. You are preaching Marxism. You are utilizing people. This bill has all the ingredients of the Marxist law, the dialectic materialism, synthesis, thesis, antithesis, synthesis. You create a problem, exploit a problem, and then issue a solution for the dependency of the party. Outlined by Frederick Engels in Principles of Communism back in 1847, this 4145 is Marxism. You are utilizing people. 60 years ago, I heard the same group of people with something in Spanish, Mothers for Peace. Now they're using Mummies for Action. The Mothers for Peace were most of them killed after the communists took over my country, which destroyed. What you people did in this country is Marxism. You don't know what it is. You never been through it. You probably, most of you were in diapers or never know even born. I was there. All the chapters. I've been there. I saw the assassination, how to take the blood out of the people. And there's an interview in January, eight days after they took over the government. He says, armas para qué? Weapons for what? And he took the weapons from the people and killed people day and night. So don't send me, don't call me, come then. They don't know what they're doing here. They don't even know what they're here. That's in my testimony. Right. Hey, 30 seconds left, huh? Make it right.
You did great. Thank you very much.
You want a copy of this? I have
yes, please. Thank you very much.
Oh, okay, you bet.
Have a great day. All right, so our next panel is going
We'll see you again.
Our next panel is going to include Sarah Rimini, Madeline Garten, I believe it is, and Ashley Pollup. Ashley's already there, so that's another one. So why don't we go ahead and call up Lisa Reynolds.
Good morning. Thank you, Senate Przanski, and the rest of the members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. My name is Lisa Reynolds. I'm a daughter, an aunt, a wife, a pediatrician, and a mom. And I'm here testifying for Dr. Doreen Dodgen McGee, who could not be present, in support of House Bill 4145. 22 years ago, Doreen's brother-in-law shot his way into the home on his niece's first day of kindergarten. He killed Doreen's sister-in-law and three young nieces in front of Doreen's mother-in-law, despite a restraining order that should have protected them. Doreen's mother-in-law was shot but survived and witnessed this horrible murder of her daughter and grandchildren. The trauma continues to ripple deeply through the rural Oregon community where the murders occurred, as well into the family. Contrary to popular belief, 54% of all mass shootings where four or more people are shot and killed between 2009 and 2016 in the U.S. were related to domestic abuse. Reliable research tells us that victims of domestic abusers are largely women and children. We also know that as many women are killed by dating partners as by spouses. Oregon treats domestic violence victims differently depending on their relationship with the abuser. Currently, a restraining order against a married, divorced, or parenting partner will prevent an abuser from getting a gun, but abusive dating partners who don't live or parent children with their abuse victim can still pass the background check, even with a restraining order against them. And this loophole must be closed. House Bill 4145 closes it. We should do everything we can to stop dangerous partners from acquiring weapons. We should empower law enforcement with information when an illegal attempt to purchase a gun occurs so we can investigate and potentially stop a deadly escalation. This information could have prevented the mass murder of Doreen's family, and it can save Oregonians. Doreen is a leader with Moms Demand Action, along with myself, Lisa Reynolds, and we support House Bill 4145 because of Doreen's family being forever changed by domestic gun violence. We want to spare other families the same tragedy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hello. My name is Madeleine Garcelon, and I'm a proud resident of Salem. I'm here to share my story in support of HB 4145 and to close a loophole in an already existing law. 39 months and 10 days ago, my beautiful daughter, Nicolette Elias, was shot 7 times and murdered by her abusive ex-husband. He then kidnapped my granddaughters, who were 7 and 8, and forced them to walk back by their mother's dead, bleeding out body. He then took them to his house, and when the SWAT team arrived, he shot and killed himself. Nicolette was a loving mother, daughter, sister, friend. She knew she was in danger and obtained a restraining order against her ex-husband. He violated that order, and the day he was supposed to go to court for it was the day we buried my daughter. She did everything right to protect her children and herself, but Nicolette's ex-husband managed to obtain firearms. He used them to orphan my granddaughters and traumatize them more than any child should ever have to endure. He also took my other daughter, Sonia's only sibling, and he fractured our world forever. I am using my voice in honor of Nicolette and to help other women and children who are at risk of suffering a fate like my daughter and my granddaughters. HB 4145 will save other families from unimaginable trauma and loss. The law must recognize that the presence of a gun in a domestic violence situation makes it 5 times more likely that the woman will be killed. The boyfriend loophole should be closed so that all domestic abusers who are under restraining orders are viewed as equally dangerous by the background check system. The law must stop convicted stalkers from buying and possessing guns. Coping with this tragedy is surreal. Our grief is never ending, and our hearts are forever broken. I urge you to bring 4145 to a vote and send it to the governor to sign into law. And I thank you for letting me testimony. This is my daughter and myself.
Thank you, Chair Przanski and committee. My name is Sarah Ramey. I'm a resident of Portland, but I'm here today on behalf of Melissa Pankarak, also a resident of Portland. She's a gun violence survivor. She's unable to join us this morning. Melissa is a Marine veteran. She's a pistol coach, and she's a recreational shooter. So it may surprise you that she's in support of House Bill 4145. She served 9 years in the military, and she was a first responder on September 11th, standing in the rubble at the Pentagon. She re-entered the military after that and served her final 3 years. Melissa got married while on active duty. When she moved in with her partner, she found an AK-47 in the closet. Her husband told her that when his first wife had left him, he took that gun and camped out in the backyard of the man he suspected was sleeping with her. During Melissa's time with her husband, she heard more than one story of this nature. On December 11th, 2012, Melissa survived a mass shooting at Clackamas Town Center Mall. The shooter fired 16 shots from an AR-15, killing two people and wounding a third. He pointed the gun in her face and pulled the trigger. His gun jammed, and luckily, he did not know how to fix it. He went on to kill himself with a pistol. So far, sheer luck has saved Melissa and countless other women from gun violence, but Oregonians, we can do more. We should have laws that keep abusive dating partners who are under restraining orders from passing a background check, just like we do with abusive domestic partners. Convicted stalkers should not be allowed to have guns. And law enforcement should be notified every time a prohibited purchaser tries to buy a gun, because the purchaser knows it's illegal to try and breaks the law with that attempt. Right now, it's rare that that illegal act is investigated at all. For Melissa and so many women who know that what violent men are capable of, she implores you to vote yes on HB 4145, because luck can eventually run out.
Thank you all very much for your testimony. Our next panel will be Paul Kemp, Sherry Partain, and Andrea Platt, I believe. Who'd like to go first?
Sure.
Thank you, Chair Przanski and members of the committee. My name is Sherry Partain. I'm a resident of Southwest Portland. I'm a social worker of nearly 20 years, a children's book author, and a mother. I'm also on the leadership team with Moms Demand Action. There's a clear relationship between gun violence and domestic abuse, and Oregon's children are impacted by this dangerous relationship every single day. Domestic violence is the second most common family stress factor when child abuse or neglect is present at 33.7%, according to 2006 child welfare data. Abusers often use guns to threaten and control their victims, even if they never pull the trigger. When a child is present in these circumstances, they are forever impacted by something that we as a society could have prevented. Children who experience domestic violence are also more likely to experience behavior, social, emotional, and cognitive issues, putting even more stress on an already overwhelmed foster care system. Not only do these cases impact children, but they cost the state of Oregon, on average, $210,000 per child. This is according to the Centers for Disease Control for the lifetime of a case. House Bill 4145 will close dangerous loopholes in Oregon's laws by preventing dating partners and individuals convicted of stalking from buying and having guns. It will also strengthen enforcement of Oregon's background check system by giving law enforcement more tools to keep guns out of dangerous hands. I urge you to vote yes on behalf of Oregon's children. They deserve better. Thank you.
Thank you. Andrea?
I apologize for stepping out.
Right.
Chair Przanski and committee, my name is Andrea Platt. I am a professional wife, mother, and volunteer for Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. I have become involved because gun violence is a theme that has peppered my life, from the loss of a friend to suicide by gun to having my children in a public place where a weapon was discharged. But by far the most grievous situation, 18 years ago, my cousin shot and killed a man and critically wounded his ex-wife in a domestic violence incident that spun out of control. He is now on death row in Oklahoma. It is my ongoing and my deep empathy for the victims and their families that compels me here today. My cousin's estranged wife had a restraining order against him, yet he bought a gun, took it to her workplace, threatened her, and chased her through the building. When her boss intervened, he shot and killed that man before critically wounding his ex-wife. The victims' families have borne unimaginable suffering. My cousin's children, who are now adults, still grapple with this horrible reality. Currently, the law treats abusive dating partners and abusive domestic partners differently. Even when a restraining order exists, an abusive dating partner is allowed to pass the background check, while a domestic abuser will not. And the data shows that both partner types are equally dangerous, but our current law has not kept up with the times. In the U.S., at least 50 women are shot and killed by current or former intimate partners every month. One in three of us will experience domestic violence in her lifetime, and if the violent partner has a gun, we are five times more likely to die. Our one study shows that nearly 9 in 10 of attempted murders of women involved at least one instance of stalking in the year prior to the attempted murder. So with so much correlation between domestic violence and gun violence, I urge you to act. House Bill 4145 will close these nonsensical loopholes and will alert law enforcement officials that further investigation may be warranted, helping to prevent other families from the horrific aftermath like that inflicted by my cousin. I urge you to vote yes to make sure that our background check system works and protects all victims of domestic violence equally. Thank you.
Paul.
My name is Paul Kemp. I live in Clackamas County, and our family knows the impact of gun violence. My brother-in-law was killed at the Clackamas Town Center 2012 on December 11th. And for that reason, I'm here to testify in support of another gun violence prevention bill. Passage of this legislation will protect women from gun violence by dating partners who have been charged with stalking and domestic abuse. Passage of HB 4145 will allow law enforcement a legal tool to protect women from abusive dating partners by prohibiting them from purchasing a gun or possessing a gun. Data shows that American women are 16 times more likely to be killed with a gun than women in other high-income countries. Data also shows that the presence of a gun in a domestic violence situation makes it five times more likely that a woman will be shot and killed. Passage of HB 4145 will also provide local law enforcement with alerts from Oregon State Police when a prohibited buyer tries to buy a gun and fails to pass a background check. This will enable local police to intervene before the prohibited buyer tries to buy a gun illegally. Federal officials rarely investigate and prosecute those prohibited gun buyers from a failed background check. Oregon State Police conduct the background checks. This is known as a point of contact instead of the FBI. So our own state enforcement agency can notify local law enforcement every time a prohibitor buyer fails a background check. Two other states, Pennsylvania and Virginia, are also point of contact states, like Oregon. Passage of legislation similar to HB 4145 has resulted in almost 15,000 arrests by prohibited gun buyers in Virginia since 1989. Pennsylvania law enforcement arrested over 2,300 prohibited buyers in 2015 alone. Passage of HB 4145 will ultimately hold prohibited gun buyers accountable, as all relevant law enforcement agencies will be sharing relevant information about those who lie and try to buy a gun. Local law enforcement will also be required to report back to OSP the action they took, if any, in each case. If no action was taken, local law enforcement agency has to report the reason no action was taken. We need the state to take action because we know our federal government will do nothing.
All right, thank you very much. Our next panel will include Penny Okamoto, Chris Coughlin, excuse me, and also Marge Eastley. So, good morning. Who'd ever like to lead off?
Thank you very much, Chair Przanski and members of the Judiciary Committee. I'm Penny Okamoto. I'm the Executive Director of Ceasefire Oregon. Thank you very much for taking our testimony today. Ceasefire Oregon supports HB 4145. You have our submitted testimony already, but I would like to hit a few highlights from the testimony. First of all, we know from the Oregon Health Authority that from 2003 to 2012, 256 people were killed in the context of intimate partner violence in Oregon. Most homicide victims are women and children, and more than 80% of female victims of intimate partner homicide were killed by their current spouses or boyfriends. Most male victims are killed by someone other than an intimate partner. In 2015, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported that homicide was the fifth leading cause of death for women between the ages of 18 and 44 years of age. I'd also like to note that 76% of intimate partner femicide victims have been stalked by their intimate partner. So clearly there is a need for this. This bill also falls into Ceasefire Oregon's plan to reduce gun violence. Our overarching goals, first, to increase the standards of gun ownership, second, to enhance accountability of federally licensed firearms dealers, and third, to improve safety standards of gun and gun ownership. So this would definitely fall into the first one of increasing the standards for gun ownership. I am very happy to take any of your questions that you have, and thank you very much for your time. Please support HB 4145.
Thank you. Chris?
Chair Przanski and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chris Coughlin. I'm here today to speak in support of House Bill 4145A on behalf of Children First for Oregon. Children First represents the interests of Oregon's 880,000 children and believes that together with communities and leaders across the state, we can build a state where all children thrive. For the past 4 years, we have worked with our partners to identify legislation to achieve that goal, and House Bill 4145 is part of this year's children's agenda. You've heard some very compelling testimony already today about the impact that domestic violence can have on children. I just want to add that in 2016, DHS reported that over 7,500 children and teens were secondary victims that were served by community-based organizations. Children and teens are often unrecognized secondary victims of domestic violence, but as you've heard today, when firearms are present, the stakes are even higher. So we ask for your support for 4145. Thank you very much.
Thank you. March.
Chair Pozanski, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Marge Easley, and I'm here representing the League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League is strongly committed to the reduction of gun violence, to closing loopholes in current firearm laws, and above all, the reduction of domestic violence. We are strongly supportive of HB 4145, which will strengthen Oregon laws related to firearm possession for those convicted of stalking, intimidating, molesting, or menacing in domestic situations. We believe that this is not an attempt to take firearms away from law-abiding gun owners, since the term law-abiding does not and should not apply to those convicted of stalking under Oregon law. We also question the arguments that I've heard today that false accusations will proliferate or that past ex-girlfriends or boyfriends will use this law to seek revenge. The process for obtaining a stalking conviction is not an easy one, and the court system is not in the habit of obtaining stalking convictions without probable cause. I ask whether these arguments would also apply to any laws related to stalking or to domestic violence. There are always occasions when false accusations might occur, but this is against the law. We believe that the provisions also in this law to require the Oregon State Police to enter conviction data into law enforcement databases is an excellent closing of another loophole. We applaud the brave women and men who have come forward today to tell their stories. And we believe that by working together, we can reduce gun violence in this country, and we will be here next session and the session after that to work toward that end. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. That concludes everyone that has signed up on the witness registration. So I'm going to ask again for those that are here, is there anyone else who didn't sign up who'd like to give testimony today on House Bill 4145A? Not seeing, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 4145A. And what we're going to do is we will be carrying over the bill, House Bill 4145A, until tomorrow, Wednesday, which is, I believe, the 21st of February.
We're scheduled to be taking testimony tomorrow on another bill, but we are going to carry this one over for a possible work session tomorrow. So with that, I want to thank everyone who came forward, and for those who are taking this in by radio stream, if you want to give testimony and you were not able to do so, or you want to supplement whatever testimony you gave, the record will stay open until 5 p.m. today, and there is a process for you to go online through the judiciary office to be able to give that testimony, and that email address is sjud.exhibits@oregonlegislature.gov. Again, I want to thank everyone that's been here this morning and the decorum that you had in the hearing room. And with that, we're adjourned. Thank you.